Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould. And today we is the gathering, and we are taking your questions. Many of you have written in with certain questions regarding the afterlife, and we'll do our best to discuss and address. But if you want to call in live and ask a question, feel free. The number here is 888-627-6008. And we will do this show with no commercial breaks, so there'll be plenty of time to get to as many things as possible. And in lieu of that, I'd like to mention a couple of things. You have about a week left to take advantage of the Valentine's Day raffle, where you could win a medium reading. So $5, you'll be supporting the foundation. So if you haven't got your tickets, please do so. Many of you, we've discussed the Netflix Surviving Death series. Obviously, that's still running, so recommend you check that out. My book, The Medium Explosion, is doing well, and we hope that you have an opportunity to take a look at that. And I did want to mention that Tom and Melissa and myself and all of our volunteers have been busy planning the grief retreat, and we will be holding it in July 16th to 18th in Connecticut. We're getting a lot of inquiries, a lot of them, spurred on by the feature in the Netflix, series. And we will be COVID compliant. Nobody knows what it's going to be like in July, but we're planning for all eventualities, and it will fill up quickly. It's not on the website yet. Members will get advance notice of it, and then we'll put it on the website. And I would imagine that'll be, within the next week or two, we'll have that up. So having got that out of the way, one last thing, like everybody to join me in wishing Tom Gould a very happy birthday. Today is his birthday, and how kind of him to celebrate with us. So we appreciate that. So we'll start off with some questions. As I said, you're welcome to call in with one, and we'll discuss them. Here's one. I've recently lost my partner of 40 years. While I've had a medium reading not long after that, and it validated the connection between her and him was real, information that she could not have possibly known, there still remains a nagging doubt and skepticism within me that there is survival after death. So through all the devastating grief, how does one develop the faith to believe without doubt that this is all true? That's kind of a million-dollar question. It's like how much evidence is enough? People go for medium readings and have a good reading and they want more, or people have a personal experience and they want more. And as Tom and Melissa will tell you, when we hold these grief retreats, we're blessed to see a lot of people that leave the retreat, with a lot more belief and comfort and hope than when they came. What we worry about is the same thing that this person is writing about. Will it last? Right. And what we believe is that in order for it to last, you have to lay a foundation, of knowledge about all the things that point to life after death, and embrace the personal experiences. But I think there comes a point where you just have to make a decision. Either I'm going to, believe in this, or I'm not. I looked at the evidence. I've had the experiences. I looked at the data. I'm not going to continue questioning, and I'm, you agree? I mean, how do you answer that question, of how you overcome the doubt?
I think it's always going to be an ongoing challenge, and you need to have those tools at the ready, like we suggest to those lost in their grief, some go-to techniques or comfort areas that remind you of what you were shown, the evidence, hopefully, those good feelings. And I like to suggest to people we're always talking about journaling, but I think a separate journal with noting any time that you feel your loved one is near might be getting a sign, that nickel or dime on the ground, or a certain bird showing up, or those are I hate to say those are the little signs. Those signs are quite huge to many people, but it could be just something more, even more rare than that, but you write it down and then you revisit it in those times of doubt, and you recall the way you felt when you had those encounters, and you just have to keep going back to that. It's like, it's probably like anything, you have to have your go-to remedy to help you remember what your focus is going to be. And hopefully that, gets them through until they can come to a grief retreat or talk with other like-minded individuals, which is also an excellent idea. Have a buddy or partner, somebody, she lost a partner. That's a poor choice of words, but somebody who understands, and contact that person. Like people in weight loss, when you're about to eat that donut and apparently you have a coach and you say, I just have to, And they say, but remember all the weight you've lost. I don't care. I need it. So this person says, remember how good you felt when you thought you saw their image, or, a song came on. And hopefully that'll help.
Yeah, I think the important thing here, we've been now 2 decades trying to help people in the grieving process. And I've certainly come to the conclusion that there is no cure for grief. It's, and a popular expression is that you don't get over the loss of somebody, you get through the grieving process. So it's something that you live through. And what I have seen is the people who get evidence that their loved ones are still around, and that, more importantly, when you leave this planet, you're going to hook up with them again. That brings the greatest comfort. I mean, I have seen, as you mentioned, we host these grief retreats, and there are people who show up on Friday in the deepest of grief. I totally feel for these people all the time. But I have seen that through the experience and hearing of the experiences people have had, and in communicating and knowing that there is more to life than this physical, that can turn people around in a weekend. I've seen people go from being as glum as can be to leaving on Sunday smiling. That's rare, and it's, I'm sure those people go home and they still miss those loved ones as much as they ever did. I guess that's what I can tell the person, that you find, and we do a demonstration. Melissa talks about a toolkit of things that make you feel better. I guess this person has said there's been months since she lost her partner. In those months, it's been hellish months. I know it has been for you, and I feel for you. But think about, there were times that you might have laughed, that you might have sat and enjoyed a cup of tea and go, oh, this really tastes good. And for those moments, your mind is off of your grief and on to something else. And the process that we try to develop in people and hope to nurture is the process of finding those moments. Mm-hmm. And knowing you can get to those moments by doing some things. And that's my recommendation to how you get through is find your moments of peace, find your moments when you do smile or you do laugh and realize, oh yes, I can get there again. And
recall that it's the belief again too, not just the grief, because a lot of grieving people don't even believe there's an afterlife.
Well, I feel very sorry for them. Because, yes, what I said before, that the greatest results, the greatest turnarounds I've seen in grieving people is when they're face-to-face with, oh, my gosh, there really is something more, and I will see my loved one again, and they're not here physically, but they're not gone forever. In fact, the soul is eternal, and they live on, and what is helpful to know that we have found in our research and talking with the scientists and authors and mediums that we talk to is that not only does your soul survive after the death of your body, but your personality, your consciousness also survives. So that, again, when you lose a loved one and then you yourself pass, you will be reunited. And then the reunited, the soul part of our existence is eternal. So when we talk about living here on Earth for, you know, most people get not most people, but some people get to 100 years. Most people get 70, 80, 90 years, if they're lucky. But that, in the term of eternity, that's just a blip. That's just a blink of an eye or you know, a weekend adventure that you're in the soul universe and you say, I want to go back to the physical. Or I want to go to the physical world and, you know, play there. You're just going there for a weekend. It's just a weekend. I mean, you meet somebody who's, their weekend started earlier or it ends earlier than yours. And you're going like, oh no, that was my buddy for the weekend. You know, where are they? You know,
well, you go for the weekend, but you don't have to pack your bags. So
that's right.
All right. Let's see. Here's one on reincarnation. Is it likely that the concept of reincarnation is only introduced to those in the spirit world who have attained a fairly high level of spiritual progression? So, you know, it's a good question. It's an interesting question. The evidence seems to say no, that you're just as likely to reincarnate no matter what level of progression that you're in. I don't know what determines it. I mean, with the common thought is that not everybody comes back, and that there are levels, you know, in the afterlife or, you know, in that other realm. But why some people come back and why don't, or, you know, to me, if you were at a fairly high level of enlightenment in the spiritual world, it would seem to me you have less of a need to come back than somebody that would be in the so-called lower plane of existence, right? I mean, yeah. You know, if you're if the theory is that you're coming back to learn more and to learn lessons, once you've attained a certain amount of knowledge and completion of your soul, there should be no more, you know, reason to keep coming back. So it's a hard concept, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I feel like I want to put I don't mean to sound this way, but some human judgment, not judgment. Yeah, I guess I do mean judgment. What we think. In the cases where people have reportedly recalled another life. And what would it have been? I don't have the answer to this, but let's just use the examples in the Netflix docuseries Surviving Death. So did we meet more than two individuals in that who had reincarnated? Or was it just
yeah,
two,
well,
two examples?
Yeah, well, with two kids, yeah.
And so if we thought about who they had been, one was the pilot.
Right.
One was the filmmaker and actor.
Right.
And so here comes my judgy part. Like, we evaluate, well, what kind of lives were they leading that would have led them to come back? Now, we could say that the fighter pilot who was shot down didn't get to complete something. So maybe that's why he came back. With the other fellow, you know, whether it could have been a project, I don't recall, in not giving away too much in the series, but the relatives of that fellow, you know, if they shed any light on that, he had had, I think, several wives, a family, you know, my judgment part is more like, so what do we think? Why? What did, was there something we could say that that person came back to do? We can't answer it, of course, but it's just like evaluating, well, what can it be based on? Who knows? Who yeah. knows?
And I take a little issue, not an issue necessarily, but I think there's a gray area here where I haven't heard enough evidence to make a call. But you talk about, you know, people going to the other side and needing to come back. I think there's also people who just want to come back. I mean, people who feel that they enjoyed the physical and they wanted to run through it again. Yes, I definitely agree that there are people who came here to try to deal with issues with their soul, and apparently how you live your physical life can affect the quality of your soul when it's pure energy again. And then some people who get to the other side and say, well, you didn't do much to help your soul out. I think you're going to have to go back and try to, you know, get that there. But then I also believe that there are people who get to the other side and, as you say, are a higher level, and the question was asking, well, are there levels? And I have heard evidence that yes, there are definitely levels on the other side. It's not all just linear one side or the other, but yes, there are progressions on the other side as well. And I believe that some people come back to help those people who are coming back, who need to come back. There are the people that have to come back because they're off the path. They've fallen off the path. They got to find some way to get themselves back onto the right path for their soul. And if they don't do it in one life, they're going to be sent back for another life. But if they're, how many ever iterations they've been reincarnating, if they're not getting it right, they, you know, I'm sure there's a spirit on the other side saying, you know, we better go down there and see what we can do about helping them. Like, for example, your family unit. Perhaps there's one member of the family who is not getting the message. So you get another soul who does have the message in the same family. And we're going to put you in proximity with this person, and maybe you can help guide them to the right way. So there are different reasons for people to reincarnate. And one other thing I might mention also is that we're not just one place at one time. So reincarnating doesn't necessarily mean that you're just here on this planet for the 50, 60, 70 years, and then you go back. You can be on this planet for that 50, 60 years, but you can also be somewhere else on another planet or 200 years ago. You can be living multiple physical existence at the same time out of your one singular soul.
I think we're getting that way too deep for me.
All right, well, let's move on to another subject. This person writes, they had called in for get a reading on the Mediums and Messages show, and this person didn't get a reading, but when the medium did a reading for somebody else while he was waiting, that information didn't fit. You know, the sitter to which the information was intended, but it fit perfectly for him. So his question is it possible that there was a crossover in the reading? And I think we would be in agreement that, because we've seen it so many times, that yes, that is, you know, just think about it. If there's a lot of spirits lining up to get through, and you're just by the very fact that everybody's tuning in, their energy is part of the whole thing. So it's kind of difficult for the medium to discern, who it's intended for. And that's we've witnessed that lots of times, right? In group readings, you know, it's like the medium goes to one person, is striking out, nothing makes sense, but the person sitting right next to that person, everything makes perfect sense. So,
yeah, and even the readings where it does make sense, there's a person on the other side of the room going, "Well, gee, that sounds like my father," and the mediums actually have a term for that. It's called piggybacking. Where, as you say, I'm called to the example, great example. One of our mediums, Joe Shield, was at one of our grief retreats. And he had a room full of people. And he said, "On the count of three, I want everybody to tell me something that's great about your loved one." And he goes, "One, two, three." And of course, the whole room erupts in, "Oh, yeah." And then he stops and he goes, "Welcome to my world." That's what the spirits are doing to him. Spirit knows mediums. Spirit is with their loved ones. So when a loved one shows up for a reading, especially a group reading, your loved one is there in spirit and wants to talk to you through the medium. But if there's 100 people in the room, there's 100 or more spirit in the room who want to talk through that medium to you. And so when the medium is open and they can recognize that they're being heard, or understood is probably the better word, they throw their messages out for my loved one. Tell my loved one this, tell my loved one that, tell my loved one this. And he's giving a reading, he zeroes in on one person, but he's hearing all the other spirits. So yes, if you're in a group reading and it sounds right on the money with whom you wanted to hear from, yeah, real good chance that is your person getting the message through, even while the medium's talking to somebody else.
Right. Okay. Here's one. I know we've had questions like this in the past, but I hear different opinions about the Ouija board and was wanting to try to communicate with my sister through this, but I haven't because I don't know if it's dangerous or not a good way to communicate to our lost loved ones. Can you help clarify this? And there's opinions all over the board, bad pun, but yeah, I've had conversations with mediums themselves that say stay away from that, and I've had conversations with mediums that don't think there's, just another form of communication, when you think about it, who knows? I mean, are there negative energies? Yeah, but would the board bring in a negative energy, whereas the negative energy just wouldn't manifest by itself? I don't tend to think that. I just think I've tried it. Unfortunately, I didn't get any messages or anything, but I've tried it in the past. I just think that if there is a malevolent energy that is trying to get through, for lack of a better term, that they're going to find a way, you know. So I don't put much stock in that theory that a Ouija board is dangerous. It's just my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think the board is the problem, as you say, that it's not the board itself that's inviting in the spirit. I think what I have learned from mediums, it's how you open up. It's all about opening up channels of communication. In fact, many of our mediums tell us that you don't need a medium. You have it within yourself to be open to communication from spirit. And so the one thing is you have to learn how to, through meditation and the chakra studies, opening your channels of communication. But the very important thing is, and where this Ouija board thing comes in, is because usually the Ouija board is a bunch of teenagers at a party, and they say, is there anybody out there? Well, you don't want just anybody out there. You're opening yourself up for malcontents or spirit that is not in the best of interest. The one thing that you must realize is that the power of love, the power of the universe is love, and that is not harmful. That wants only good for you. So, and that's the most powerful energy in the universe. So if there is evil energy or bad intent energy, it's no match for the power of the love of the universe. So before you experiment with opening your channels to communicate with whatever spirit comes through, protect yourself. And the mediums will tell you that. You imagine the loving white light of the universe. Imagine it coming down from above and going through the crown of your head and completely enveloping you in a white light, a white protective light. That you do that, and then you also invite, I'm only inviting loving, caring, healing energy, and then you're open for the greatest communication of all. But just don't open the door and let anybody in the house, basically. You have to invite the spirit in that you want to be in.
Yeah, and I would add that in all these years at all the medium readings that we've witnessed, I don't recall ever hearing a reading that was negative. I mean, there may be some information that comes through that you may not like, but there's no what you would call evil or malevolent thing. And maybe that's because like Tom said, the mediums generally speak to their guides and say, I only want, love and light, to dominate.
I want that's a good opportunity, Bob, to remind people who are sitting with mediums, if they read your book, they should learn this, that if a medium were to ever suggest that there's bad or evil spirits around you, you just get up and leave.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, you seem to have a curse on you. for an extra $100 or four, I can do something with that. Red right. flag, get out of there.
Yeah. Here's one. Sometimes mediums convey information from the person in spirit that's happening in real time in the physical world. Does that mean that they're seeing what we're doing? I think that they're aware of things. I don't think that it's like they're tuning in, so to speak, 24 hours a day. But I think, I'm reminded, I had one dream visit with Fran, and it was early on. It was the only one that I had. And it was, maybe a couple of weeks after she passed. And in the, I was aware that it was lucid, so I was able to ask her a couple of questions, and I don't know why I asked it, but I said, and I wrote this down, just what you were saying, you know, Melissa. I said to Fran, I said, can you see it all? I mean, that was my question. It was a little weird. I mean, can you see it all? And her answer was, yes, colors and shapes. Now, that could be because she was only on the other side for a couple of weeks. On the other hand, you know, it's you know, we think of it in physical terms, like they're visually looking at us, you know, and to seeing what was going on. But it may be more of an entanglement or a sensory thing. Like, you know, they see colors, they see shapes, but it's not like where I'm looking at you right now. You know, it telepathically they may, you know, pick up on thoughts and communicate that way. I mean, that's the way I'm interpreting it. So, yeah. But certainly we've seen the evidence a million times in a million readings that they are aware of what's going on in our lives. I mean, how exactly is the question, right?
Well, I'm glad you said that about the colors and shapes, because that isn't something that I had heard before. I was always anticipating life on the other side as thought transference. So what you might be thinking is more like when they, you know, when the says they're with me, they see me all the time, and the medium will say, they're not with you in the bathroom. But the thought process is now a little more thought-provoking to me, because colors and shapes, that's not as those, that is sort of a more of a seeing sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if we sense colors and shapes.
Well, don't forget, I mean, we talk about synesthesia, you know, where people have all the senses mixed in, and supposedly in this other realm of existence, everybody has synesthesia. You know, there is no delineation between sight and sound and touch and feeling and taste. So it's everything is experienced, you know, together. So who knows?
What I was recently told, I was fortunate, Tom made sure I had a medium reading, because with both my parents passed and I never had had one since they had passed, was the medium saying that my mother was telling me what it was like on the other side. And she said, it's very much like here, but much more peaceful. And as she described it, she said, your mother said this is something you wanted to know about. And it was. My mother and I talked about that a lot. It was like, you're going to tell me all about it, Mom, when you get to the other side. And even as the medium was sharing some of the things, she was using words that she hadn't really ever heard before. And I said, oh, I'm going to have to write that down. And she said, me too. She said, I'm going to have to look that one up. So I thought that was pretty cute.
Yeah. Here's one that just popped in. Does a loved one who died by suicide remain available? And because, you know, our answer would be yes. I mean, the medium, people who, you know, the manner of death doesn't seem to affect the communication that comes through. And mediums bring through people in all modes of death. So, you know, I mean, the thought process that some people have that somehow you are in a, you know, in a bad place, or, you know, banished, or, you know, I mean, that's a religious concept that doesn't really hold water. So we don't believe that, and the evidence doesn't show it. Now, maybe you need, in certain manners of death, more help on the other side, or maybe you need a little bit more time to acclimate, you know, if, I mean, that's possible. And that may be an explanation why some people don't communicate, and people don't get signs from their loved ones, at least not for, you know, a certain amount of time. But I believe that, you know, the manner of death is not something that affects communication. Are you in agreement?
Yeah, mentioning the religious aspect, which is the first thing that came to my mind, and I do not have a religious upbringing, so I really don't know what individuals are being taught to believe, but I have a general feeling about what I've heard friends tell me. And if what now is puzzling me, I do believe if people, you know, believe in God and Jesus and someone waiting for them at the pearly gates, I do think that will be what they first see when they get to the other side, because that is what they've grown up learning. But if that is the case, then I'm not suggesting that then what goes hand in hand is true for someone who takes their own life. But I think that's really going to be hard to unlearn. We like hearing, okay, if you're going to be at the pearly gates, that's beautiful. But then is it okay then to say, oh, but no, the other stuff is nonsense. That's not going to happen. I just think with that life review, which I somehow strongly believe in, I think, like you said, Bob, whatever were their issues, they might just have to be spending a little more time revisiting those issues.
Right. And most times, you know, when somebody passes by suicide, I mean, it is an illness, a severe depression or an addiction or something. And most people die by illness. So it's just another illness, you know, and that's what happens.
Right. And there's always the talk about the contract that you agree to when you come to this planet, that you're here for, everybody's here for a purpose. Now, we have a person who's excellent, who presents at our grief retreat, who lost her daughter through suicide. And if you think of the big picture, that the daughter knew she was coming to this world, she said, "Yeah, and I'm going to be a suicide at whatever age, and that's my lot in life." And what it has done is her suicide has made it possible for her mother to become an excellent speaker and to help grieving people by the hundreds, if not thousands. And maybe that wouldn't have happened. If she hadn't lost her daughter, she would have gone on. She's a professor. She would have just gone on teaching and not reached all the people that she has touched with her stories about getting through the grief of a suicide. That's an important thing that both she and her daughter signed up for before they even came to the earth.
Right. And we have a kind of a related question. Do you have to believe in God to believe in an afterlife? And my answer is no. because if there is life after physical death, there just is. You know, it's just part of what we are, part of the universe. And what difference does it make? If there are many people that don't believe in God and don't believe in an afterlife, and then they physically die, and holy crap, you know.
Exactly.
Okay, whoops, I was wrong, you know. So I don't think a lot of people, to them, it goes hand in hand, you know, their religion and the afterlife, and you go to the afterlife and your existence in that afterlife is dependent upon all of the rules that you abided by or didn't abide by when you were in the physical. And I don't, the evidence doesn't seem to hold that. And Melissa, you mentioned, you know, life review, you know, that's your judgment. It's self-judgment. You know, I don't think that we're sitting before a being or a panel of judges that says, okay, that's a plus, that's a minus, whatever. We feel and empathize with, you know, all the good and the bad that we've done to others, and we feel that, and that's how we judge, and that's how we progress.
I think you're Right. Yeah. But I think the bottom line is do the right thing, folks.
Yeah.
Do the right thing while you have the chance.
And also that, you know, you've got to separate God from religion in a lot of ways, because, you know, this whole idea down here on earth that my God is better than your God and that gives me the right to slaughter you if I want to is just absurd, because all the teachings of all the religions talk about love one another, and love is the power. And so whatever you're calling it is immaterial. There is one power of the universe. There's the energy of the universe is very strong, and it's based in love. It feeds off of love, and it, you know, people from different countries and different parts of the world call it something else, but it's just the one great spirit. And I mean, the people who are sitting there going, well, no, my God is this. Really? I mean, is your God that limited that it's only segmented? No, think about it. If you believe in God, you believe it's all-knowing, all-power, all, you know, omniscient. Anyway, that's the point. If you believe in God, you have to believe that God is the one God. And you know, to kill somebody because they call that a different name is ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, we've touched a hot button here, you know, on this subject, and we are getting other, you know, comments that are coming in on this one. So, you know, we just got one that this person's daughter died from an overdose. And she writes, if there is a soul contract, I still haven't found my purpose as a result of her death yet. And that's a valid, you know, comment. You know, there's no neon sign, you know, that, you know, about, you know, what you're, you know, assuming that there is some sort of meaning and purpose. It's really hard to recognize it. I mean, we used an extreme example by the, you know, the person that really is helping a lot of people. But for the majority of people, I don't know that for most people, that they ever find, you know, meaning or purpose out of it. You know, maybe the meaning and purpose comes after we cross and we have a different perspective.
And I just want to say, I feel so sorry for the person who contributed that. I have heard, and I can't now recall whether it's, you know, something I read or one of the people we interact with, but the discarnate, the one who took their life, said it had nothing to do with you. It was all within me. There was nothing, absolutely nothing you could have done differently. So to now have to look for a purpose in it just might not happen. You know, it did happen for the person Tom spoke about. And even with the foundation, you know, the foundation came as a result, not a suicide, but it came, it was the positive outcome of a tragic situation.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, you know, tragedy is a catalyst for a search for meaning and purpose. So at least that is something, you know. I mean, I don't know if we see any tangible results for it, but we sure as hell question why. Yeah. You know, we never may realize while we're in this incarnation why, maybe not till after, but many, many people have found openings, you know, after loss. It just spurs them to think of things that they never thought of before. You know, sometimes we find a purpose and sometimes we don't.
What about for the parent who's lost a child to suicide and they're grieving, and they meet another parent who's lost a child, and some words that they share helps the other person? It could just be as simple as that you're two, you both have had this experience, and you don't even know that your gentle, kind words of encouragement save that person.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, I got an email yesterday wasn't addressed to me, one of our foundation emails, you know, and it was a person that really had just found out that Fran had passed, you know, and she wrote a very nice email how, you know, she lost a family member. She was horribly bereaved. She called the office and Fran talked to her for over an hour, you know, and made her feel so much better and made a difference in her life. So exactly what you're saying. It's just that, you know, out of her tragedies in life, she was able to offer comfort, you know, to somebody else. I mean, a story that we've heard over and over again, and she's not, certainly not the only person like that, you know. So something good, I don't even know if she recognized it while she was here, but you don't know how what you said, Melissa, something that you say to somebody else, you know, and that becomes your meaning and purpose.
And the bottom line, of course, is, okay, I had to experience this loss so that I could do this. And in the back of your head or even in the front of your head, you're shouting, I would rather not do, you know. Oh, yeah. So it's...
No, I always said that. I'd rather sit here and remain the son of a bitch, you know, and not have to go through this. You know? Here's one. We were just talking about this on another question before. The person writes, I often see colors when I close my eyes, when I'm praying, when I'm meditating, and I'm trying to relax. Red is the most prominent color. She also sees purple and lavender. And her question is, are my loved ones from the other side trying to contact me? I guess, in other words, are they trying to contact me through color? You know, but what we were discussing before is that color could be thought, you know, color could be something else, you know, and maybe that is your loved one expressing them. That's the easiest way for them to express something to you. Now, whether you recognize the message and the color is another thing, but I don't see why not. I mean, it could be other reasons too, but I'm open to that possibility.
Yeah, I recommend to that person that they find out about the chakras, because, you know, the universe is all about energy, vibrations, frequencies, that sort of thing. And there have been extensive studies as to the relationship to our energy centers in our body and how it relates to the different chakras and different colors. Like red is the root chakra, that the person might be grounded, whereas lavender and purple is the crown chakra that is in touch with the spiritual world. So the person who, and kudos to the person for meditating and seeing this, because I do that too. When I meditate and close my eyes, I see different colors depending on what intention I send out. If I am concentrating on a healing energy that I want to send in a prayer or a meditation to somebody, I will often see green, which is the heart chakra, where the healing comes from. So I would encourage that person to find out about each of the chakras and what they mean, so that when you get to a point where you're meditating and seeing colors, you might have a little more understanding of what the message is that's coming through to you, or where, what you're opening up.
Here's an interesting question, and it's very long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll just give you the gist of it. She had, when she was 16 years old, she had surgery to her head and jaws, and she lost a lot of blood, and she had a blood transfusion. And after that, she had a medication that gave her a bad reaction, and she had what she describes either as a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience, and it was amazing to her, and it looks pretty tracks with a lot of NDE accounts. So I guess it was an NDE. But her question basically is, since she received so much blood from somebody else, is it possible that all of her enhanced intuitive abilities were the result, were carried from the blood of the previous person, you know, that she received? So she questions whether she can sense experiences through that blood. She even goes further, you know, can past lives be carried through blood transfusions, you know? So now, I mean, it's an interesting question, I say, because we know, and there have been books and papers written about accounts of people who received transplant, you know, organs, and like a heart, you know, and then all of a sudden, that person who received the donor heart develops all of these habits and proclivities and, you know, and vices and other attributes that they never had before. But then when they investigate, that's what the previous, you know, the previous person was a smoker, even though this now they, you know, they never smoked a cigarette in their life, but they crave cigarettes, you know. So if that can happen, you know, then certainly I don't see why this blood mate could have an imprint too.
Well, I just would have to speculate if all the blood came from the same donor, because my understanding, you know, people donate blood, and it wouldn't be a whole body's worth of supply. You know, I don't even know how much they draw at a time, but
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that you wouldn't know if that was the case. It could be from one of the, you know, many samples. So who knows?
I mean, I've heard about that, about the heart transplant, and certainly a heart is coming from one person. And
yeah.
From what we saw in Surviving Death, the Netflix docuseries about the young children who actually knew who they were reincarnated from, it seemed like, especially in the case of the pilot who was shot down in World War II, very young, it was their chance to get back to the Earth and finish up things that they didn't have time for. So perhaps the heart donor says, oh, there's my heart. It's beating in a body. I'm going to go be part of that. It's possible.
Yeah.
What about this, though? Is this really, really far-fetched? People who, you know, do the DNA, what do they call it? The investigation, like Ancestry.com.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for the intelligent people listening to Melissa speculate about this. DNA is in our blood as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in everything. So could that even change this individual's DNA? She does a, you know, Ancestry.com and gets suddenly some new possible relatives because
right.
You have so much DNA now in common with this other person?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, it's those companies like Ancestry and you know, they have, I was watching a thing on 60 Minutes, I think, about that, about how their data, you know, is being compromised by, you know, foreign countries. And they just think of the research possibilities, you know, if you were able to see a link between DNA and intuitive abilities, you know, I mean, they have endless data that they could tap, you know, so I'll just mention this quickly because we only have a minute or two. The person said they watched Surviving Death on Netflix, and in the episode that showed physical mediums, it seemed silly to me when the medium started speaking in different voices, including that of a child. What are your thoughts? Personally, my personal opinion, I agree. I thought it was silly. I'm well aware of that there are, you know, legitimate physical mediums, and certainly in history, a lot of people did channel spirits and the spirit took over their vocal cords and their body language and everything. But this I didn't get that feeling to me. I didn't think of it as being real. That's just my personal opinion. So I just want to say that.
A little more harm, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's hard to say, well, they should be doing this and they shouldn't be. I mean, they are what they are, and you take it pretty much on face value. All I can say is from personal experience, we actually did visit a physical medium, and it struck me as everything that happened in that room could have been faked.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't,
we'll have
but
to go on that note, but I agree with you, Tom. And it's like, I think it's like anything else, you know, there are good and there are bad. And you know, the same thing with mental mediums. Let's finish with our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Well, thank you, everyone. And Tom, again, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Good night.
Peace.